The one-eyed warrior was curious. Why would a victorious baron wish to leave a celebration that was basically in his honor? Following him to find out would leave Ryan open to trouble if he was caught, and the baron might have slipped away for some reason that was dangerous to himself and his companions. But if it wasn't, then Ryan was sure he could talk his way out of trouble. Ryan had more to his armory than his fighting skills. The baron moved through the near-deserted corridors of the subterranean ville, his ceremonial cloak of faded, wine-stained damask billowing behind him, his hair moving in rhythm with the heavy tread of his bulky frame. Only those citizens with vital tasks to perform weren't in the main hall, and the baron greeted them cordially as he passed. They returned his greeting, then quizzically viewed Ryan as he followed a few yards behind. He made no attempt to conceal himself, as that would only have been ridiculous given the geography of the ville. After 5 minutes striding through the maze that was raw, the baron came to a halt in front of a unit that had a ragged curtain across its entrance. With a delicacy and care that surprised Ryan, Alien lifted the curtain and looked in.
Good time to see him?
Yeah, come in.
As the baron stepped inside, he turned to the one-eyed warrior.
You may come as well if you wish, Ryan Carter.
Ryan, feeling like he did when his father, Baron Titus of Front Royal, had caught him at mischief when he was a child, followed Alien into the sparse unit. It was obviously a medical care center, equipped as best as possible and scrubbed clean, possibly by the woman who tended to the wounded sec man. He was unconscious but seemed peaceful. Alien asked a few questions of the pale, haggard woman who tended him, listening intently to her answers, before wishing her well and leaving, beckoning Ryan to follow. Outside, Ryan felt an absurd need to explain himself.
I wondered what you were doing, if there was anything wrong.
And besides which, it doesn't hurt any to keep an eye on a baron in a strange ville when he wanders off in the middle of celebration.
He waved silence as Ryan attempted to speak.
No, save your words. I would do exactly the same in a strange ville. You have your people to worry about, just as I have. I like you, Ryan. Most barons, and that is what you are in your own way, are concerned only with their own power, not with using that which they have. I know my ways may seem strange after all you've seen, especially if the stories traders bring with them about other vills and other barons are true, but I feel that you will understand me.
Perhaps I do. What you were taught, you believe, and you try to live right by it. A man could do no more than try to live right by his code.
The baron smiled, almost to himself.
A rare thing to find two such as us together. Not a boast, but a sad reflection, I think.
He looked back over his shoulder.
That young lad hasn't been under Harvey's charge for long, and it's doubly hard for his mother, as she is one of our medics. Her own son. It's right to celebrate defending our way of life, though.
He clapped Ryan on the shoulder, almost to bring himself out of his reverie by a forced goodwill.
Come, let us return to the festivities.
The celebrations continued for some time, with almost the entire ville drinking themselves into a stupor. For the companions, it was difficult to stay sober. The ville's own brew was a sweet vegetable liquor, with a syrupy texture, and was deceptive in its taste. It was, as Jack noted, far more potent than most brews they had encountered, and a certain amount induced a mild hallucinogenic euphoria due to fungal spores that had crept in with the vegetable matter. Despite their best efforts to stay sober, only Dean managed to remain upright by the end of the celebration. He had a reason. The young Carter was suspicious not of the Baron, but of his wife. Neither did he trust Harvey. Whether this dislike was exclusive, or whether it was because they were allied in some way, he didn't know. But one thing was for sure. He would never get a better chance to explore the ville and find out what, if anything, the Baron's wife was plotting. So, when Christie had settled a maternal eye on Dean and warned him against the brew, he was only too happy to play along with her for once and swear off the alcohol. He carried a small cup with him for most of the evening to ward off those who wanted in their exuberance to thrust it on him. He tried a sip, but found his abstinence helped by the fact that to him it tasted like he imagined sugared horse piss would taste. He feigned intoxication, and with almost everyone around him blissfully drunk, he was able to get away with it easily. As the celebration died down, the drunken revelers either found their way back to their own living units or just collapsed on the floor, resting happily among the debris. One of those sprawled in this manner was Jack, unconscious and beyond being roused. Dean discovered this with rising dismay, as he had hoped that the albino would take him to the section of the ville where he had discovered the locked room. For some days, Dean had been brooding on this, and was sure it held the answer to whatever questions he was asking. Now he would have to find it on his own. That was one problem. The other problem, perhaps two problems, consisted of Harvey and Jenna. Dean had kept a wary eye on both, and had noted that neither seemed to be drinking in any great amount. Both were now absent from the hall, and in the chaos he hadn't seen them leave, so was ignorant of their sobriety. If they were both alert and going about their business, then that could prove a possible danger to him. The hall was now quiet, the silence broken only by snoring and sleep-addled mutterings. Carefully, Dean rose to his feet and picked his way over the prone bodies until he was out of the hall and into the maze of tunnels, basements, and units carved in the walls that constituted Raw. His playground for now, a playground for a most serious game. Dean remembered Jack telling him that the room was located on an outer corridor, almost as far as the pipes would run, and that it was in the opposite direction to that in which they entered the ville. It wasn't much, but it was a start. Dean walked casually through the central sections of Raw, trying his best to create the impression of someone who was drunk and trying to find his way back to his unit. He had realized that there would be members of the community who had abstained from the celebration because of their duties, and he had no wish to attract their attention to him in any way, other than that of being another reveler. It worked. The few people who saw him as he wandered around the tunnels smiled indulgently and left him to his wandering, thinking him drunk. His staggering gait also enabled him to wander down some passages and then out again without attracting attention to his methods. He wished that Reiner Christie were with him, as he felt the need of some kind of backup. He had seen them leave the celebration, as he had seen Mildred and J.B. leave. He guessed that they were snatching a few moments of relaxed peace together, and had no wish to disturb them until, or unless, he found something to justify his suspicions. Even Doc would have been good as backup, but he had seen Doc unconscious on the floor in the same manner as Jack, and so knew there was little hope of reviving him until he had slept off the brew. All the time he was thinking, he was searching, crossing off corridors in his mind, exploring nooks and crannies to see where they took him. He had plenty of time. A celebration like the previous nights would take a long while to sleep off, leaving him free to explore. One direction had been closed to him by Jack's words. That left three directions out from the area around the central hall. Three directions, all of which had more than one corridor or passage that led off like spokes from a wheel. But Dean knew what he was searching for, the metal door that Jack had told him about. That held the key, and that narrowed his search. Still so many corridors and passages, but at least he knew what he was searching for. His patience and nerve were beginning to wear thin when he finally found it. He shivered as he walked down the deserted corridor, feeling the drop in temperature and also feeling that his search was nearly over. The lamps were still lit, not having been doused because of the celebration, the lame lamplighter now lying drunk in the main hall. But although still alight, the oil was nearly used, and the lighting was dim, some of the lamps along the corridor guttering and casting a moving shadow across the wall. Dean found the corridor as eerie as Jack had before, an atmosphere chilling the air more than the cooling pipes. The fact that, as he turned the final corner, he could see that there was no place to hide, made the corridor even chillier for the young Cotter. Dean lost the drunken gait, his footfalls now kept as quiet as possible, and his posture changing. He walked now on the balls of his feet, his balance thrown slightly forward, springing on each step. He quieted his breathing until he could almost hear the blood flowing in his veins. The metal door ahead loomed large in his vision. Dean looked over his shoulder and paused mid-stride. There was no sound behind him, and he could see nothing. He looked ahead at the patchwork metal door and took a deep breath. Stepping up to it, Dean reached out a hand, fingertips extended. His fingers touched the cold metal, pushing gently. He didn't expect the door to yield, but to his surprise it swung open on well-oiled hinges, belying its looks. The room inside was well lit and empty. The door swung right back to the wall, confirming this. It was all too easy. Dean stood on the threshold, wavering for one moment, and then he was in. He advanced to the middle of the room, keeping alert for any sound or movement other than his own. It was only when he was certain that he was alone in the room that he allowed himself to relax enough to take in his surroundings.